Welcome back to the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet, and why. This week, we're discussing a trio of access issues that impacted users of ServiceNow, Microsoft 365, and Azure Virtual Desktop, all of which remind us that even one broken link can disrupt the entire digital service delivery chain. We'll also unpack a pair of data center problems that sparked issues at Workday and an India-wide outage for Reliance Jio users. I'm Barry Collins, and I'll be hosting today with the amazing Mike Hicks, Principal Solutions Analyst at Cisco Thousand Eyes. As always, we've included chapters in the episode description below, so you can skip ahead to the sections that are most interesting to you. And if you haven't already, we'd love you to take a moment to give us a follow over at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen. Let's begin with that ServiceNow outage, which was reportedly caused by an expired certificate. Here's Mike to explain what happened.
When we think about the expired certificate, what we've got to consider is this one small part in that complete chain. So, you know, we talk about the service delivery chain being made up of all these components and network being a mesh. And so what you have within there is these components that basically have got to check the authenticity or make sure you say who you are, and this is where the certificate comes in. So what happened here is then there was this root certificate. So this actually, as it says, is at the heart of the system there. The outage actually impacted the management, instrumentation, and discovery server. So this is a service that's actually used as a crucial component within the ServiceNow architecture, and it enables the communication and movement of data between the instances and the various factors on there. So this actually then obviously has to have a certificate issued to it. So therefore, then it can actually trust the people that are exchanging the data with it. So because it goes to various data connectors to sort of pull that in. So you can imagine this is the heart of it. Now, because this sort of certificate expired, therefore, then it couldn't actually trust them. So we actually lost the connections between these mid servers and its downstream stuff. So in no way was anything ever compromised, because the whole point of the way this architecture is set up is it starts to have this information coming in, but it just couldn't then authenticate any of these. So it stopped the communication.
Do you have any tips for companies in regards to certificate management so they can avoid running into similar issues?
So one of the main things we're going to say is let's just understand your service delivery chain. Understand the components that sort of make it up from there. And then you can actually see, rather than just looking to the front door. So if I'm just doing some sort of ping check, I'm just sort of tapping the front door. Is it available? Is it up? I'm not therefore going to see the exchange of that certificate stuff. So what I really need to do is to actually look into that service delivery. Doesn't mean unnecessary to go right down onto it, but that obviously helps. But what I can actually do is understand the components and then look at the certificate chain as it comes through there. And you can see all the dates. Now, the fact I'm looking at that, once I can therefore then start to see, oh, it's going to expire, I can actually then take affirmative action against that. So say it's going to expire within 10 days, let's reissue it before it expires so you don't get into that. So I said in this case, they knew it was going to expire and they were going through that change process, it just didn't quite work out.
Microsoft services were affected by a pair of unrelated incidents in mid to late September. Let's start with a problem for Microsoft 365.com and Office.com customers, which, like the ServiceNow outage, was another example of how issues with one component of the digital service delivery chain can render the entire service unusable.
On September 24th, Microsoft experienced this outage, and it was actually due to issues with a step in the authentication process. So the outage started around 9:10 a.m. UTC, and it caused what Microsoft called to be an authentication loop. And this then sort of prevented access to Microsoft services, in this case, Microsoft 365.com and Office.com. Now, what happened and how it manifested, what you saw was these timeouts when you're trying to do this authentication process. When we actually looked at it, what you actually started to see was you see them go to the sign-on page, and then it gets redirected down to, again, back to another sign-on page. So what would have happened in instance for the users doing this would have been they'd have actually gone to the sign-on page, they may have put their credentials in, or they would have put their credentials in, then they'd sort of hit return, and then it would actually return to the next sign-on page. So this is why we saw the timeouts. So it came back with it just timing out, and that's why we saw the timeout service errors, but it meant people then couldn't authenticate to the system, therefore then couldn't get on to the next stage.
Earlier in the month, on September 16th, Azure Virtual Desktop users in various US regions experienced disruption. What was the problem here, Mike?
So this is a problem. It's caused with actually a degradation with a SQL database, which actually stores the configuration of data processing. And this sort of replicates into multiple and secondary copies. The problem actually sort of impacted the configuration of metadata stored specifically in the East US 2 region there. Now, what we actually saw here was then the process itself said it replicates the configuration data and does this from the primary to multiple secondary copies. Now, because there was sort of this problem going on, the secondary database replicas were sort of behind. So actually couldn't, we had this problem where we couldn't update them. So you started to get this slip. And then when the databases can't be synced, what happens then is it sort of effectively stops the, it does a lock on it. So we actually then couldn't proceed any further. So therefore you actually can't get on. So this was sort of issuing these new environments. It couldn't get over. So what the engineers started to do was they actually then manually intervened and they actually moved to the failover where they actually started to move things around so they could actually then sort of replicate the stuff. And then the issue started to resolve and we started to get this flow back through and things started to reconnect again.
In early October, Workday suffered a problem with one of its data centers. Mike explains what happened with this incident.
So on October the 1st, Workday had this outage and affected customers. It very specifically affected customers that had their tenants hosted in the WD5 data center. So that's Workday's data center, and it's actually in sort of Portland, Oregon. Now, what happened was customers were experiencing these sort of server timeouts and intermittent issues. The other thing then is when we actually started to look at this, it's that kind of points it to be application side of things, because if we have this network connectivity, you're going to get this complete block coming in there. So you're going to sort of see these areas. But when we actually went back and looked at the network pass, we could actually sort of see getting up to, we talked about that front door, where we get to the data center front door or to the, they're using Cloudflare in this instance. We could actually get in and we could actually connect into the systems. We could see it there. But then these reports coming through the latency, and when she saw them again, repeating themselves as receive errors. Now, receive error is where we're looking at something coming from the back end itself. And this is basically the time to sort of render that page to load it, to put the components on, which is going to involve some areas where we're calling stuff from the back end in.
So on first inspection, Workday appears to be experiencing an application problem. But as Mike dug deeper, it became clear the issue lay elsewhere.
Go back to that fact we're talking about WD5. So WD5 data center, as I said, is their own one there. There are other data centers that Workday have. So WD12, for example, which is sort of hosted in an AWS environment. And we saw no issues occurring on there. So again, network connectivity, but also users were actually being able to get to their tenants and tenants hosts on there. So we're coming back to this one facility. Now Workday actually came out and they said that they had this issue. They pointed it back to WD5. We could actually corroborate this because what we then saw was we've got that network connectivity going into the front door. We can see all the connections there. And then we're seeing these server timeouts again going to this WD5 tenants there. But then what we started to see was this intermittent. So you can see it coming up from there. So what we're saying there is not an application issue. Because if it's an application issue, we'd actually probably see a complete failure across there. So we're looking at some sort of traffic distribution, forwarding of the traffic within that backend system. So again, we're breaking it down those various paths. We got into the backend there. We can actually see this is where it is. And then in fact, Workday came out and they said that there was an issue with what they called a shared resource. And then they made some changes to a load balancer to actually sort of alleviate this and resolve the problem.
Do customers of service providers such as Workday have a choice over which data centers their data is stored in? And when customers are thinking about the entire service delivery chain, what should they consider regarding where their data is being stored?
Yeah, you can choose. And if you actually go through, I mean, this might be an instance, we're talking about whole tenants here. So where they set the sort of tenant up in those environments there. And there is availability zones. They do all this, you know, to sort of maintain them. It really comes down to this functionality in the back end, because Workday itself wasn't down. We're talking about where their data is stored, but absolutely you can actually sort of choose where that is. And this is also where they have their integration. So if you think about what Workday does, you have different integrations into different systems to bring the stuff in. But when you look through some of the chat, I saw people that had actually migrated their tenant to WD12, for example, which is why we then want to see where they were having any issues or sort of looking at that side of things. So it's a good point, though, because, again, we're talking about different things here. We're talking about distributed application architecture, and you know, we're dealing with CDNs. We have different pipes coming in there, so we can actually get to that system. But then thinking about, you know, where's my data going to be? Where's my users located? Where do I need to access it? What are those types of things? And that's then when we start to choose it. So you can actually sort of decide where you're going to go. And we have had instances where people sort of migrate their workloads, they sort of come across.
Telecoms provider Reliance Jio experienced an outage in multiple areas of India on September 17th after a fire hit one of its data centers. Explain the impact of this one, Mike.
What happened was there was a fire that occurred within Reliance data center. What we identified was we started to see sort of a number of forwarding losses coming in. So from downstream ISPs, we could start to see these, and they sort of centralized around the Mumbai areas. So what we could see was this forwarding loss as it sort of coming into this central point, which was in Mumbai. And then once you found out from reports, there'd been a fire in the data center there.
The fire in the data center affected the peering point for a number of different ISPs using the Reliance Geo network.
What that meant for the Reliance Geo customers was that they then didn't have the network pass through. Now, there's obviously ways to route around it, but this was one of these major points. Therefore, there's lots of paths going through. So there's sort of some time to go around this, as it were. So immediately there was lost connectivity. And because we're talking about this data center, we're talking about sort of all the services. So you're talking about losing the phone connections, you lose the data connections, as well as impacting some of these transit providers. Now, some of the downstream providers from there would have obviously had different alternate paths. But if this was one of these major peering points within that location, then obviously we're going to have this disruption that occurs from there. This is sort of the second fire that we've seen. So we talked about in a previous podcast, the Alibaba data center had the outage where the lithium batteries sort of exploded. But in that case, it was actually the water damage that caused the outage. In this situation, we don't really know whether it was the fire or the recovery from the fire that actually caused the outage, only that the actual data center went offline.
With climate change making extremes such as fire and flooding more likely, are companies having to reevaluate their network resilience?
I think they are. And you've got to consider this in a number of ways. We've seen a number of data centers who are upgrading their chillers. They're doing this also because they're growing, right? So they're growing in size and we've got the AI workloads within there generating a bunch of heat. We've got all this happening there. So we have to have sort of more powerful chillers. But also what that then sort of think about from a resilience perspective is we also now, because of the way the sort of network is and because of how we've architected the applications, things, there's ability to sort of split some of this stuff up. So you can start to consider how you have the smaller data centers, but also, you know, the resilience is probably more critical than it's ever been. So yes, we have these conditions coming across there, but we are obviously in a 24/7 world. We rely on the internet, we rely on these backbones, we have the connectivities. But then we have obviously this capability. So we're talking about, again, where my traffic is, where do I need to pass it through? So how's my data in flight? Where's that going to go? How to those considerations? But also then where's my user population? Where are they going to be? Where's my data going to be stored? And what you want to start to do from all of these is to get away from having those single aggregating points where you have either bottlenecks from a performance perspective or that could obviously cause these sort of major outages. But on top of that, what I also need to do is if I do have a backup plan or a backup circuit, I've got to make sure it's working. So it's got to be there and it's got to be ready. It's not just a case of sort of turning it on. I mean, in the old days, I started off my life as an electrician. We had all sorts of sort of gen sets and generators out there. And even now, I still see this to this day, where there's a backup generator comes online and it hasn't been primed or it doesn't have any fuel in it. So it sort of goes offline that way there. So it starts to cause these issues. So it is just as important not just to plan my resilience and understand my path, but make sure that it's on an always on situation.
Before we finish the show, we're going to take a look at the overall outage trends we've seen over the past few weeks. What are the numbers showing, Mike?
As we came out of August, we started to see that sort of that drop. Now, the reason I mention that is because we've then come into sort of September time period and we're up to where we are now. And with the trend has sort of gone up. Global outages increased during September 16th to 29th. And what we saw was a 5% increase in the first week. And then again, it continued to increase into the second week with an 8% increase. Now, this was in contrast to what we saw in the United States. So United States-centric outages, they experienced a decrease in outages over the same period. So initially, we saw a 26% drop in that first week. Then it was a further 9% decrease in the following week. Now, because we sort of had this going up in one direction, the global outages going up and the US-centric outages going down, what we then saw was only 33% of all the network outages were actually sort of occurred in the US during this period. This is a complete deviation from what we've previously observed, where we've sort of seen them accounting for at least 40% of all observed outages. You could go back a few weeks before we, or a few periods when we actually last saw this, but it's the trend we saw mostly through this year. So it'd be interesting to see how that continues going into the next week.
Are these numbers consistent with what we've seen previously at this time of year? Don't we normally see outages begin to rise as we leave the summer behind?
We do. So the one thing I will say is these seasonal patterns are kind of same. So as we started to come out, I expect now we're starting to see the US outages start to increase again, where we start to have the sort of planned maintenance stuff. I'm already seeing that. So if you like, you know, Europe goes back to work earlier. I start to see those sort of increases in the planned maintenance work. And remember, when I'm talking about the rest of the world, I'm also then including sort of the APJC area as well. So, you know, this some planned work. And it really sort of only takes some outage in the area to sort of generate these interface conditions where we start to see sort of a rising number. So when we talk about these seasonal trends, we're really talking about the maintenance type of window. So we see them occurring at various times of day. As I say, this is kind of similar to what we've seen, or this is similar to what we've seen repeating in sort of previous years when we go back over the numbers.
And that's our show. Please like and subscribe. We really appreciate it. And not only does this ensure you're in the know when a new episode's published, it also helps us to shape the show for you. You can follow us on X at FowlsandEyes or send questions and feedback to internetreport@FowlsandEyes.com. Until next time, goodbye.